Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Chuck and Winkler, Milwaukee's longest running sports talk morning show. In one corner, a guy who has covered the Packers for 30 plus years. In the other, a Green Bay owner. Chuck and Winkler in the morning on The Fan.
Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. Good morning. I am Bart Winkler. That is Ryan Horvat sliding over for Chuck, who will be back Monday. Got this tweet here from Frank. Says, guys, Super Showdown will be terrible, but Goldberg plus 180 is pretty spicy. You going to throw your money on Goldberg?
No, I'd probably take Taker. I don't see him doing the job to Goldberg.
I don't know.
I don't know, though.
Odds I saw Goldberg in front.
Those are two big egos. What I would do is like have them square off. Lights hit. Bray Wyatt comes out, takes them both out.
But why use that in Saudi Arabia? We'll talk about this later.
Yeah.
Andy Herman, unless you want to talk about some WWE, Andy, you're more than welcome to with us.
Yeah, is Goldberg at plus 180? Because that seems like a good bet.
Let's do it.
Yeah, the odds I saw this week, he was the favorite. So we'll find out about there. The Super Showdown pay-per-view in Saudi Arabia is going to be terrible, but I will be watching. You can check out what Andy Herman's got to offer, Cheesehead TV, the Pack-A-Day podcast as well. He's on Twitter at Scani Sports. Thanks for a couple minutes, Andy. I know that they're just like, you know, without pads, and it's kind of hard to tell, but it seems at least there's a refocused energy that you would expect with a new head coach. Are things as loose and maybe optimistic when you see them that we're hearing about down here?
Yeah, I think so, with a small bit of a caveat. And I think that caveat is, you know, they just hired a new head coach. Aaron Rodgers is healthy. They signed four big priority free agents. You know, they had two top 25 draft picks. If things weren't, you know, positive and happy and a good buzz around this team right now, that's probably a fairly big red flag. You know, hope always springs eternal this point in this time of year. So I think you have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, because of course there's always going to be that renewed energy when you have kind of that new leadership come in and all of those things that I just mentioned. That being said, I've been so impressed with some of that energy. You've got the music playing throughout the practices. Aaron Rodgers seems very laid back. He seems very comfortable within the system and with this new coaching staff. So I think the biggest thing at this point when you have that new coach coming in is you don't want any red flags at this point. You don't want anything to say, you know, oh no, this may have been a mistake, and there hasn't been, you know, and of course this is Matt LaFleur's first time being a head coach at any level. And I think when you're coming off you know, a Mike McCarthy era where he was, you know, decade plus, and he had everything down to a science, everything down to a detail. He was very detail oriented with his practice schedule and practice regime. I think, you know, for me, one of the trepidations was, how is Matt LaFleur going to be able to come in and, you know, set up this practice schedule? Is it going to be, you know, as efficient? Is it going to look the way that it should? And I've just been so impressed with how everything's looked in the two practices that I've got to see. And they've maximized their time really well. They've run drills that are able to kind of get, you know, different focuses across so that they're maximizing time. But, yeah, everything seems loose. Everything seems great. But like I said, at this point, it should. We'll see maybe at some point in the season when they get punched in the mouth or they have to face adversity, if that positivity and that energy stays the same. I'm hopeful that it will, but it's still obviously very early.
Andy, I get nervous when Devontae Adams gets a cold or just sneezes. So when I see the report that he misses his second public practice, and, you know, we heard LaFleur say that he was dealing with a minor injury problem, medical staff just wanted to exercise caution, I get nervous because the season hasn't started. Training camp really hasn't started, and the preseason and whatnot. Do you know anything about that injury and kind of what's going on there?
I haven't heard anything in specific about the injury. You know, everything that they've said is that, you know, it seems to be pretty minor and they're, you know, just kind of holding him out more for precautionary reasons. He did get in to a couple of the practices, I know, so it's not like he hasn't practiced at all. So I think, you know, everything's okay there. And I think the great thing with Adams is, you know, he steps on the field tomorrow with no practice, and he's one of the best receivers in the NFL. So, you know, of course, with a new system, you know, you want that timing to get down. I actually interviewed Taylor Maritz, the former Wisconsin Badger offensive lineman who played in that Tennessee system. And one of the things I asked him is, what's the toughest part about this offense? Who has the toughest job? And he actually mentioned that the wide receivers, because of all the different motions and the different sets and the different bunches and everything that they do within this offense and what they ask those receivers to do, he said that that's the toughest position to kind of learn. So you want him out on the field. You know, to me, when I went back and you're, you know, during the season and graded every single play last year, Adams was unquestionably the MVP of this Packers team for the season last year. So, like you said, anytime there's anything, there's that aura of nervousness, and you want him to be out there. But I'm confident Adams could, you know, play week one without practicing at all, and he wouldn't miss much of a beat.
Yeah, and obviously we want him out there, especially right now and during OTAs, as this team's figuring out really who they are under Matt LaFleur. But I guess one beneficial thing would be you have a lot of young receivers who are trying to prove themselves. And I saw a quote from MVS where he was saying, you know, he wanted to be a leader in the locker room. And I like that because he's obviously a second-year guy. But a two-part question here with Kumerow, you know, with Geronimo coming back, and he looked good before the injury last season. How many receivers do you think they actually keep on the roster? And I know it's pretty early for that question, but also who do you see kind of making that big jump? I'm reading a lot about MVS, and he looks like he's going to be a stud, but who do you think makes the big jump? Because we know Adams is going to get all the targets, Devontae is, but, you know, when he's being double-teamed and whatnot in the red zone, you know, who do you think steps up and makes a difference out of those receivers this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll answer your, you know, first part of the question first. You know, I think they'll keep six receivers. I think the four are pretty locked in, you know, barring injury, with Adams, Allison, and then EQ and MVS. So I think those four are pretty locked in. And then I think the other two positions, I think there's going to be a primary battle between the next three on the roster, between Jay Kumerow, Trevor Davis, and Jamon Moore. I think, you know, ultimately there's probably two spots for those three, based off of, you know, very early practices. I would say, you know, Kumerow and Davis seem to be in the lead. When what they've been doing is they've separated team activities into two different parts. So you've got one side of the field that's got kind of the starters and primary backups, and then the other side of the field where, you know, it's kind of your guys that are trying to work their way up the depth chart a little bit. So they're running two different team activities, and Kumerow and Davis have spent more time with the ones and the twos in that kind of primary group, whereas Jamon Moore has been spending more time with kind of that backup group. So I think Moore's a little bit behind the eight ball right now, but as I mentioned earlier, it's still very, very early. But I think probably two spots for maybe those three receivers, and then maybe you get, you know, Darius Shepherd or a T.O. Redding who could maybe make some noise if they had a big training camp. Maybe they could get into the conversation. But right now I would say two spots for those three. And then from a breakout candidate, yeah, I think all the things that we're hearing about Marquez Valdes-Scantling is really super exciting. You know, you've heard him say that he wants to take that leadership role, as you mentioned. You heard Aaron Rodgers say that he's been, you know, working his butt off and that he's looking like a primary receiver in this offense. And if I could pick maybe one person on this team that I would want to have break out, I'm not sure I wouldn't pick MVS, because you have that 4.3 speed, his size, you know, his ability to get downfield and open up a defense on the outside. If you can put that on the opposite side of Adams, I actually posted a tweet earlier this week. There was a video that I took from the Patriots game where Adams and MVS are on the outside, and they both just run these beautiful deep routes, and both of them get open. Unfortunately, it was an incomplete pass on the play, but you just kind of saw the ability that those two have. And if MVS is on his game, that's going to open up things for everyone else, because that safety can't just sneak over to Adams' side. He's going to have to play over the top a little bit more. He's going to have to make sure that MVS isn't beating his corner one-on-one. Or if that safety does, you know, go over and sneak more towards Adams' side, that means that corner's one-on-one with MVS. And if he shows he can take the top off of the defense, corner's got to start playing back. Well, Rodgers can start hitting some of those smoke screens and some of those quick hitches to MVS, kind of like he did with Jordy Nelson, and he can, you know, just kind of taking candy from a baby at that point. So, and it, not only that, but it opens up things under the middle for Jimmy Graham. The safeties are playing deeper, which opens up things for Aaron Jones. So I love the idea that MVS is breaking out. It's super exciting, and hopefully that's the case once the pads come on as well.
Andy Herman on Twitter at Scotty Sports. Again, the Pack-A-Day podcast, Cheesehead TV. Make sure you check it out. The Twitter account, Scotty Sports. A lot of good research, a lot of good film watching from Andy. The Jimmy Graham question, it seems like the answer is either one extreme or the other. I still have high hopes for Jimmy Graham. I think that he can be the red zone target this year in a new offense that he wasn't last year. Where are you in terms of the impact that Jimmy Graham can have on the Packers offense in 2019?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple, you know, questions that remain out there. Was it a system issue with Jimmy Graham last year? You know, you heard Mercedes Lewis come out last year, you know, after the season, he and Martellus Bennett were being interviewed, and they basically said that this, Mike McCarthy offense did no favors for the tight ends. And when I go back and watch at the tape, it's tough to disagree with them. It's a lot of just stuff in the flats. I mean, how many times have we seen those little Richard Rodgers and, you know, Martellus Bennett plays where they're just catching, you know, a ball, you know, right in the flat, and they have to try to make their way upfield and turn upfield. And these aren't the tight ends necessarily to be doing that. Even Jimmy Graham at this age, he's still got some, you know, speed and ability, but, you know, you want him more dynamic up the middle of the field and giving them some routes where they can win with their routes and not just having to, you know, try to make their way one-on-one. That's not what those tight ends are necessarily good at. So is the scheme going to make him better? And then just how much was he banged up from a season ago? Because, he had the thumb injury. Even before then, it looked like he was maybe fighting through some injuries. I thought earlier in the season, especially in preseason, he looked very active. He looked very spry. He had the catch in preseason in the red zone, and immediately we were talking about how he was going to be a 10 to 12 touchdown guy. And yeah, he looked dynamic. And then for whatever reason, that kind of fell off at some point. And when the regular season hit, he never produced. And you know, when I go back and look at my grades from last year, and you know, recall what I saw on tape. You know, my biggest issue was with him as a blocker. There were a lot of plays where not only was he just not a good blocker, but there was a lack of effort there. And then there were just plays that were 50-50 balls that, you know, as a 6'6 guy, you want him to go up and win. And he just wasn't able to, you know, explode off the ground like he was able to earlier in his career. And he just wasn't winning those 50-50 balls in those jump ball and red zone situations. So I am confident that this offense is going to open him up a little bit more. Aaron Rodgers has made mention of that as well. And I'm hoping that maybe some of those injuries were dragging him down from a season ago. And if that's the case, absolutely, I think he can maybe look a little bit more like the Jimmy Graham that we expected. You know, Green Bay had a kind of low-key way to get out of that deal if they wanted to. They would have had to pay him and take some dead cap, but they definitely could have got out of it and definitely could have saved some money, and they decided not to. So they still felt that he was going to add value to this team. I'm with you. I have hope there, but I want to see it on tape first.
We know about the additions free agent-wise and even in the draft to the defensive side of the ball. But one thing the Packers, I guess, were able to do last season when they were bad and hurt was give some chances to some of these other guys that they were picking off the scrap heap, what have you. Is there anybody that, you know, maybe we saw some time last year that made a jump, maybe a Tony Brown or even Natrell Jamerson? Is there a guy that is standing out defensively to you that we should be watching for?
Yeah, as you were, you know, starting the question, the guy that immediately stood out was Tony Brown. And, you know, Tony Brown's still got a ways to go, and I think he's in a really unique situation where if you told me that Tony Brown worked his way up into some serious snaps this season, I wouldn't be surprised one bit, because he has that speed, he has the tenacity. You can win with Tony Brown on the football field. At the same token, if you told me that he came out, you know, very similar to Lindsey Pipkins from a season ago, who had a really nice 2017, they brought him in as an undrafted free agent. He got some playing time at the end of the year. He didn't really carry that over into training camp the next year, and he ended up being, well, I guess, traded for Antonio Morrison and then eventually cut by the Colts. So if you told me that he ended up in a similar situation because he didn't carry it over from a season ago, I wouldn't be totally shocked either. But really, really liked what I saw from Tony Brown on tape. He has a natural ability to play press man corner, and that always is going to have value in the NFL. He's somebody that really stood out to me, just his play from a season ago. And then a little bit under the radar guy who kind of stood out to me as well was Fadol Brown. And he's really behind the eight ball, especially with some of the additions in the draft, like Kingsley Keke and even Rashawn Gary being able to kick inside, Darius Smith being able to kick inside. I think he's definitely behind the eight ball, but was impressed with a little bit of what he put on tape. And there were a couple plays even in practice where I saw him, you know, stand out a little bit as well. So those two immediately come to mind.
Andy, good stuff. We'll be in touch with you during the offseason. Always good to get your insight, and we will talk soon.
Thanks, as always, for having me. Can't wait, guys.
Andy Herman, follow him on Twitter at Scani Sports, Scani IE Sports. And again, you can follow him at CheeseheadTV.com. And they do the Pack-A-Day podcast, where they put out a podcast on the Packers every day. Good extra Packer content if you're looking for it. He joins us, as did Billy Schmidt on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019, look no further. Call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935. There was a tweet out there. If you guys are off Twitter, for as much as we've talked about Twitter on this show, mm-hmm. if you still have not signed up for Twitter, stay strong. It's a wasteland.
It is.
You're doing a great job.
It is.
But if you're on Twitter, you probably saw the tweet that says Mitch Trubisky's better than Aaron Rodgers. So we are going to... Did you not see that tweet? You're giving me a blank stare.
No, I saw it. I even saw Cowherd scoff at it.
I saw a guy from Pro Football Talk agree with it.
Who? Not our boy Renner.
No. Not our bachelor boy Renner.
Okay.
No, we'll talk about that. And if it's not Mitch Trubisky, is it anybody? Your thoughts on Rodgers coming into 2019. Hey, Perkins, they've got the Friday fish fry today after 11 o'clock, $10.99. From 11 until close, you get the fish fry with all the fixings, one of the staples of any Wisconsin season, summer, winter, fall, and spring. You know the four seasons. That is at Perkins today. Tomorrow's when kids do eat free, so you get a meal, you take your kid out, and they'll get a free meal. They do that on Tuesdays and Saturdays at Perkins after 4, and then Sunday, of course, a lot of good brunch options that you can get really any time. That's the good part. If there's something that you're already, you know, desiring, breakfast-wise, and you think, Sunday brunch is going to be Perkins this week, you can go get that for dinner tonight. You can get the breakfast anytime. So do take advantage of their menu at Perkins all throughout the greater Milwaukee area. I'm Bart Winkler. That's Ryan Horvath. Mitch Trubisky better than Rodgers? Some are saying yes. Are you? Should Eric Kratz be the Brewers catcher? Did Drake cost the Bucks the finals? Is Mitch Trubisky better than Rodgers? 799-1250.
Flag to the right, the left tackle, number 72. Look at this formation. Trubisky's going to keep it himself and take it into the end zone. Well, Bears fans, how'd you like that for your coach's debut?
That was game one last season. I believe the Bears led at halftime. Was it 20-0?
20-3?
And then what happened?
21-3?
Rodgers came back and won that game, and he did get hurt in that game, but things look good, at least for the Packers. They also look good for the Bears because Trubisky had that good first half, and then Khalil Mack really had a good half too. The Bears winning the NFC North, will they do it again this season? A lot of it's going to come down to their defense. A lot of it's going to come down to a new defensive coordinator, and a lot of it could come down to Mitch Trubisky. There was an article I saw yesterday. I saw a tweet from the NFL Wire. And, okay, this is part of the USA Today network, and it says, can Mitch Trubisky dethrone Aaron Rodgers in the NFC North? And I thought, wow, a national outlet is putting this out there. And you may have seen this tweet, the NFL Wire.
Mm-hmm.
I click on it, and then immediately it says, Bears Wire. So this is a Bears-written article. There is a Packers Wire. There's a Lions Wire. There's all this kind of stuff. But they were ranking quarterbacks in the NFC North, and this author said it's Rodgers, Trubisky, and then Stafford, and then Cousins. Now, I would agree that Trubisky's better than Cousins because I think Cousins is terrible.
Give me Cousins over Trubisky any day, anytime,
no.
any place.
Cousins can throw an accurate ball.
He can't beat good teams.
Cousins might have the best. There was a ball he threw to Diggs that always pops up where it's like, wow. I mean, that's why they got Cousins over.
He can make every throw, but he makes some terrible decisions.
The guy I was so high on, and now I can't remember his
Case
name.
Case Keenum?
I wanted to call him Cade McNown, yeah. Case Keenum. So that's where I would put that. I'd go Stafford, too, but how good is Stafford? I only really see Stafford be good when they're down 30 in the fourth quarter.
Uh-huh.
But either way, Rodgers is the top quarterback in the NFC North. That should not be very debatable. Michael David Smith, Pro Football Talk, took this article and said, this is true when you factor in player talent and contract. So if you're gonna focus, who would you rather have long-term, you know, that's a different question. Mm-hmm. You might get some, at least Bears fans, to say, well, the contract, you know, rookie-scale contract,
yeah.
I'd rather have Trubisky. Still, I think you'd rather have, in this case, Aaron Rodgers. So let's just do Horvath in for Chuck today. Ryan Horvath, I'm Bart Winkler. For 2019... is there any single one quarterback you'd rather have than Aaron Rodgers in 2019? Let's not talk about contract. Let's not talk about, you know, future. Let's just try to figure who is the quarterback you'd rather have for 1 year in 2019. I've been very hard on Rodgers. I think that there were a lot of plays last year where he either quit on the play or tried to run his own offense, and I didn't like the quarterback that Aaron Rodgers had become. I think Rodgers this year with a new coach. He already seems looser, and we'll start to see the results. But I think Aaron Rodgers, you take that Tyler Dunn article, you take all the things that have been said about him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is Aaron Rodgers going to be better because of one article? No. Is Aaron Rodgers going to be better because of all the articles and that article and the reaction to that article and then the articles off that article? Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a chip on the shoulder syndrome. Guys like Michael Jordan, guys, these guys, when they're elite, they look for new ways to have a chip on their shoulder. Rodgers has a very strong built-in chip on his shoulder in all the offseason conversation about him and the fact that now he gets to prove that he was the smarter guy over Mike McCarthy this whole time. So is there one single... I'm very high on Rodgers this year. I think the Packers are going to be good. Is there one single guy you'd rather have as quarterback than Aaron Rodgers for the 2019 season alone?
In the North or in the entire NFL?
The whole league.
The whole league.
Certainly not the North. I mean, come on.
Oh, man. Patrick, if any, which I'm going to say no, you already know, but this is a hometown homer comment from me because you already know I'm a big Aaron Rodgers guy. If there was anybody in the NFL that I would take over Aaron Rodgers heading into this season, I would go Patrick Mahomes. But there's some question marks there. Not with Mahomes, but his skill position players. I mean, you already lost Kareem Hunt last year. Is Tyreek Hill even going to be in the league? I certainly hope not. Travis Kelce's a beast. But now, when you take Tyreek Hill out of the equation and a questionable running game, there's different ways to shut down Travis Kelce. I'm taking Aaron Rodgers over anybody. And I know there's a select few that'll probably kill me for that on Twitter, the Rodgers bashers. But you said it the best, and people are always like...
I usually do.
Well, people are like, you know, one article's not going to change his performance. And I do agree with that. But guys like LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, like the great competitors, they're reading. And they're listening when guys like Colin Cowherd or Skip Bayless are ripping them and saying, I'd rather have Dak Prescott. Like, that's in Rodgers' mind. Not only that, but also he's going to be fully healthy. I mean, probably until like week three, week four, let's be honest. Rodgers finds a way to get himself injured every single season. Maybe LaFleur will limit that. And I think that that's what I'm most interested in seeing is how LaFleur works with him. Because Drew Brees was struggling, couldn't make the postseason for 4 to 5 years, even though he was putting up big numbers because he was dropping back and throwing the ball 45 to 50 times. They limited that to like 25 to 28 pass attempts, you know, even 30, 32 pass attempts, and they built a running game with Kamara and with Ingram. And I think that that's what the Packers have the ability to do with Aaron Jones, with Jamal Williams. They're going to feature the run a little bit more, and that's going to prolong Aaron Rodgers' career because he's not going to get hit as much. And I know the best Aaron Rodgers is Rodgers improvising and getting out of the pocket, but I think that could change in this new offense. But I'm taking Rodgers over anybody because I think he's going to be fully healthy. I think the new offense is going to be huge for him. Getting rid of McCarthy, I think, is going to be big for him. And yeah, I think that they do pay attention. We'd be crazy if we said professional athletes don't pay attention to the media. Even look at Tom Brady. Look at the Super Bowl run last year. Every playoff game and every game that they won, like past week 10, they would mention the doubters. You know, there was the video that they posted. It was him and Gronk. And it was like after they knocked off the Chiefs, I think, and they had the background music was the Puff Daddy song, the We Ain't Going Nowhere. But even like the Patriots, like they post that stuff all over their locker room when people write off Tom Brady. Is Brady finished? Is it time to hand the keys to Jimmy Garoppolo? You think that that stuff didn't motivate Tom Brady? People saying that Jacoby Brissett and Jimmy Garoppolo could get the job done? That pissed Brady off, and that's why he continues to do what he does at 75 years old. Because he
Is
does
Brady
care.
A top five quarterback?
Of all time?
In the league right now?
Yes.
If you were to start a team for 1 year, would you put
for
Brady?
For 1 year?
Just, no. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I probably, man, I take him right behind Aaron Rodgers, right in front of Drew Brees, I think, because I know that I have this argument all the time, and I have.
But Brees has scaled back a bit.
I always argue with people about the quote-unquote clutch gene that I don't find to be real. Like, I don't think it's a real thing, but Tom Brady has it. Like, if I have to hand the ball to somebody in the fourth quarter, I'm giving it to Tom Brady over Drew Brees because we saw it in the playoffs the last 2 years. Drew Brees makes some bad decisions. For as good as a quarterback he is, he makes some bad decisions. Brett Favre, great quarterback, made some bad decisions. Peyton Manning, like nobody ever has a bad thing to say about Peyton Manning. Look at his playoff losses. He was really bad. Brady has, and the one argument I will make is that you look at a lot of Brady's Super Bowls and a lot went into those, like the Seattle game, Russell Wilson throwing the interception when all they had to do was hand the ball to Marshawn Lynch. Like, if you look at the playoff games, he's had some really bad, bad games where the Patriots have won because every year they have a top 10 defense. But still, like, I'm handing the ball to Tom Brady in the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I'd probably still rate him number two. But then it's like, where do you put Patrick Mahomes? Because talent-wise, he's the best quarterback in the NFL. Like, Patrick Mahomes is what Aaron Rodgers was 10 years ago. He can make every throw. He can get out of the pocket. Like, the things that he could do are remarkable. Like, you probably won't see it for another 10 to 12 years. Even Andrew Luck, like, the quarterback position is stacked, but I'm going with the guy that's done it all. And I'm going to have to take Brady. But, yeah, I'm going Rodgers number one.
I think that's an interesting point you raise, Horvat, about the key phrase there being, who do you want to hand the ball off to? And with Brady, I think the thing that's underrated is if you're down four...
He's good at handing the ball off.
No, I'm saying Brady is a guy who can go out there
Patterson.
And run your offense, and you're not going to be concerned. He will check you into the right situation. I mean, Tom Brady at the line right now is better than any quarterback in the NFL. And I would even say that above Rodgers, who is known for drawing stuff up in the dirt, but great with calling out the projections, great with sending the back out on a hot read. And his deep ball has fallen off a little tiny bit, but I still think Brady's accuracy inside of 15, 20 yards, you really can't beat it.
That's Nick Bodey in the Ryan Horvat chair, who's in the Chuck Freeman chair, who's offered today. Another live report from Steven Newsman coming up momentarily. We'll talk some NBA Dan Favalli at 9 o'clock as the finals are tonight without Kevin Durant. I'm trying to just drum up who I would take if I could take five quarterbacks for 1 year. And I'm trying to figure out where I take the Breeze and Rivers and Brady's. Because the first list I wrote was Rodgers, Mahomes, Russell Wilson.
Okay.
Andrew Luck.
Okay.
Deshaun Watson. So maybe I could take Watson off for Brady.
I got to take Watson off. Only because they don't protect him.
Right. And Watson, I think... Watson versus Brady, I guess I can give to Brady. So I would go Rodgers, Mahomes, Wilson, Luck, and then Brady. Brady can win you games, but...
His talent can't win. Like, he's
you don't
not...
win games because... You win games... How am I trying to say that?
No, I get what you're saying, because here's a great example, okay? In the
Rodgers
NBA...
Rodgers can go out down 20-0 and win you... But then Brady did that in the Super Bowl,
but,
so...
Okay, but he did, but he had a lot of help. Like, James White was awesome.
And the Falcons
awesome,
also gave that one away.
And Matt Ryan was trash. Well, not even Matt Ryan was trash.
This was a Falcons team with Julio Jones, Muhammad Sanu...
They took the ball out of Matt Ryan's hands, is okay, what they did.
But I'm saying he won this Super Bowl with Gronk out. This was Martellus Bennett and Chris Hogan, dude.
Yeah, that's true. What I was saying... Saying like what Aaron Rodgers did week one, injured against the Bears, and granted the rest of the season was a big ball of trash, but what he did, like, that's what guys do in the NBA. You can't really do that in football. You can't do that. Like, if the Brewers are down 8-0, Christian Yelich can't just go out there and carry the team on his back. You know, he could hit a 2-run shot and cut into the deficit, but like what Rodgers does, quarterbacks shouldn't be able to do that. Like, that's what you do in the NBA. Like, LeBron James and James Harden or Giannis could get the ball in the fourth quarter and drop 25 points, but it's hard because football, baseball, those are like the ultimate team sports. So I agree with what you're saying. Like, Brady right now at this stage of his career isn't good enough to do what Patrick Mahomes or what Aaron Rodgers do, but he's in the right system with the best head coach in NFL history, so that does help out. So I'm with you. Whereas like Russell Wilson, same thing. Like, this year, the Seahawks were supposed to be 6-10. Like, that defense got gutted. You know, everybody was like, well, the Seahawks only win because Russell Wilson's on a rookie deal or he's taking a discount and you get to pay everybody on the defensive side. Let's see what happens when you can't bring back the Legion of Boom. You lose Richard Sherman, you lose all these guys, and they still made the playoffs because Russell Wilson carried that team. So I'm with you there. So maybe Brady isn't top five, but I mean, just the way that he doesn't get rattled.
Breeze or Rivers. I'll put this on Twitter.
You got to take Rivers off. I mean, I love Rivers, but he doesn't win in the playoffs.
Right, and he doesn't auto
rarely
throw.
Makes the playoffs.
How are his throws completed? He's got the weirdest, for a good quarterback, he's got the weirdest motion I've ever seen. Tony on Facebook, Bart, quit ripping about the pay-per-view until it's over. So throughout the show, we've been alluding to this WWE Super Showdown. There's a pay-per-view that starts today at 1 with the WWE because it's in Saudi Arabia. And, like, no one's supposed to go there, but the WWE does.
They can't even bring the women.
Yeah. And then, I guess, two women went on the plane. I guess Bliss and Jax are there. But now they don't know if they can wrestle. The pay-per-view is going to suck, Tony. No changes are going to happen, because this is what happens on every Saudi Arabia pay-per-view.
Right.
No, it's a house show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm going to watch it because I'm a person that enjoys this. But no, Brock's not cashing in.
No.
These matches aren't going to be good. Randy Orton and Triple H are going to half-ass it. So, yeah, if that pay-per-view is good, I will take back what I'm saying right now.
And did we really need Orton Triple H part 45?
Did you see their promo? They like were laughing about it.
It's so
basically
bad.
Basically, they're fighting to see who has bigger balls.
It's so bad.
I mean, that's basically...
I mean, there's no storyline. It's just, hey, so, you know, the prince of Saudi Arabia wants this match because it's two huge names. Yeah, but you already know. What's funny is you say it's a house show. The way they advertised it, they were like, tune in to an event bigger than WrestleMania. And then everybody's like, well, what the hell? Why am I going to watch WrestleMania if this Saudi Arabia show is bigger? So now they changed it. And they're like, an event comparable to WrestleMania.
Yeah, the royal
they're
family
so
over
stupid,
there is paying
man.
A ton of money to have these guys perform in their backyard. And
what a crap product.
That's what's happening. One thing that does have a storyline is the Chuck Freeman saga of the morning. He is not here as the day off, but our Steven Newsman has live reports. Throughout the morning, let's check back in with Steve.
This is Steven Newsman with another Chuck Freeman day off update. Chuck downed every last bite of his breakfast, spent a solid half hour in the bathroom, and then declared himself ready for the day ahead. On his way to the golf course, Chuck decided to tune into the Chuck and Winkler show, minus its illustrious leading man. Chuck could instantly tell that the show was struggling in his absence, but he tried to put on a brave face nevertheless. Upon arriving to the golf course, however, several of the Frames fans approached him and commented how much Winkler and Horvat clearly needed Chuck back in the studio. It's not like there was a draft last night, Chuck. You should be there, one listener said. But Chuck hasn't used a day off all year, and no amount of plummeting ratings is going to get him to think more about work today. Chuck is about to tee off on the first hole and seems ready to set a new course record. Chuck's big day off is just beginning. We've got more to come. This is Steven Newsman, Channel 4.
Appreciate Steven Newsman for his hard work. Speaking of ratings, it appears that America would rather watch a game show then this NBA Finals matchup. We'll talk about that next on The Fan.
Here's the clue for you. The line, a great reckoning in a little room in As You Like It, is usually taken to refer to this author's premature death. You have 30 seconds. Good luck. Jay, we come to you first. You started slowly, but we're coming on very strong in the Double Jeopardy round. You wound up at $11,000, which is pretty good, but in third place. And you came up with Who is Marlowe? Christopher Marlowe? You are correct, sir. And you will add $6,000. That bumps you up to $17,000. You're hoping for bad things, incorrect responses from our champion and from Emma. Over to James now. He had $23,400, and his response was... correct. His wager, a modest one for the first time. That takes him to $24,799. So, Emma, it's up to you. If you came up with a correct response, you're going to be the new Jeopardy champion. Did you? You did. What did you wager? Oh, gosh, $20,000. What a payday. $46,801.
And you had a new Jeopardy champion. All right, so maybe you watched that, maybe you didn't. Why are you hearing that right now? Good question. I'm Bart Winkler, Ryan Horvath in for Chuck. We'll talk some NBA Finals, Dan Favalli, Bleacher Report at 9 o'clock. Well, okay, so you watched that Jeopardy performance possibly on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
It had a 10.1 overnight rating, the highest run of the James Holzhauer run. So yeah. 10.1 rating. If you understand ratings, if you don't, it's like percentages. So like 10% of TVs tuned in at that time were to Jeopardy. So a 10.1 rating, 10.1. Just get that number in your head, 10.1. The NBA Finals game two at a 10.2, which means as many people are watching Jeopardy, and they knew the result, they knew what the result was going to be because it leaked. Mm-hmm. Most people knew. As many people are watching a game show as the NBA Finals. And yes, there's a Canadian team, and sure, the Canadian ratings are as high as ever because they've got a team in the finals for the first time. But the ratings are as low as they've been in a while for these NBA finals. And it you know, because of the Warriors, you know, they've been there a few years. Because maybe Toronto, you don't know a lot about them. They're from Canada. The ratings seem to be down. And when you and I mean, every conversation you and I seem to have in the last 2 weeks has been about the NBA off the air.
Mm-hmm.
You and I and Chuck, I mean, we're constantly talking. We plan to talk more about this, but then you guys call with Brewers or Packers or Bucks, whatever. That's great. but we never talk as much NBA as planned in a given day because it seems like maybe you and I are the only ones that want to talk about the NBA, Horby.
I think that is the case, and I feel like that...
So let's talk about the NBA now.
Let's do it. Just kill the ratings, and me and you could have a nice little conversation about the finals. Do you think Van Vliet's going to be tired after chasing Steph Curry around for 32 minutes last game?
I think Van Vliet's got to stop making every shot that he puts up, no matter the angle.
I think that,
that's
honestly,
starting to get annoying.
If Toronto won the finals, just really quick, and then we can get back on here. I think if the Raptors won the finals, I'd give Van Vliet finals MVP over Kawhi Leonard. Now, Kawhi Leonard's the best player on the court, but Van Vliet has been the most important. I saw this crazy...
He was the most important in the Bucks series.
I saw this crazy stat. So, obviously, Steph Curry went for 40-plus and scored like 23 or 26 of those points on Van Vliet, who they're using as like the stopper or the chaser. But in like the 31 minutes that Van Vliet guarded Curry, he only scored like 23 points. And then in like the 13 minutes where Van Vliet was on the bench and Danny Green was on him and they were rotating on Curry, he had 20 in like 13 minutes. So Van Vliet's actually containing him a little bit. So if
he's playing great defense. Look, the Raptors, I mean, game four is tonight. No Kevin Durant again. Klay Thompson appears ready to play. This was Steve Kerr yesterday making that announcement.
Klay will plan on playing tomorrow, barring something unforeseen. Kevin will not play tomorrow. He will continue to get treatment and get on the court and continue to work, but will be unavailable for game four. I was hoping that today would be the day when he could get out on the floor. It's not going to be today. It's going to be probably tomorrow. So the hope would be that he can still make it back, you know, at the end of the series. But he did not have a setback.
So no setback is what Steve Kerr is saying. He's just not ready yet. And I was thinking that, okay, you get... I mean, the Warriors have been down 2-1 in the finals before. They won that series against the Cavs. That was the Dellavedova year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of comparisons that Fred Van Vliet is Dellavedova, you know, with a beard. But Van Vliet is making a lot of these shots. Van Vliet, if he's not the finals MVP, man, he was the Eastern Conference Finals MVP because he was the most valuable. The Bucks win that series if he doesn't shoot the way that he shot. And there's been this one guy that I've, you know, been watching on Twitter that's like begging me to give the Raptors credit, and I totally have. This team is playing defense as well as any team has in the last decade. The Raptors are attacking the basket ferociously.
Mm-hmm.
They are making the Warriors work every minute. The Raptors know this is their shot, and they're leaving it all out on the court, much better than the Bucks did with their shot. So the Raptors deserve all the credit in the world. That being said, okay, the Raptors... They, as perfect as they played in the Eastern Conference Finals, if Van Vliet doesn't make those shots, the Bucks win that series.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say that the Bucks were the better team. You can play better and not be the better team. Just because you win the game doesn't mean you're the better team. Okay, I some people don't buy that, but I just, the Bucks, you missed a lot of shots. Bledsoe missed a lot of threes, and Mirotić missed a lot of threes. That's not the kind of players they are. They did not make the shots the Raptors made. And then the Warriors the other night were missing shots improbably that they never missed. So
yeah.
The Raptors, you know, you can scheme players to have tough shots. Like night one, Curry can get up a shot. So that was good defense. But night two, game two, the Warriors had open shots. Just like in that whole Bucks series, they had open shots. So if you scheme a team to have open shots with their good three-point shooters and they miss, that's not skill. That's luck benefiting you. To win a championship, you need skill and you need luck. The 2010 Packers, they were a good team. They were lucky to get in the playoffs. So you need skill and you need luck, and the Raptors have both. So to say that they're lucky to be here, that's obviously wrong. They're talented.
Mm-hmm.
But to say that they're only here because of skill and to completely dismiss luck, that's completely wrong too. And now you're playing a Warriors team that keeps getting injured, and Kevin Durant is not coming back yet. That seems like luck to me.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with what you're saying. Not only luck, let's look at coaching. And we ragged on Nick Nurse, and now we're starting to give him a little bit more respect, but he's making a lot of tough decisions, and he's making a lot of adjustments, and that's kind of where we went against with, or you know, that was kind of the knock on Bud heading into the season, and then once again after the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, Nick Nurse makes some uncomfortable adjustments in this series. Danny Green has been on a milk carton. Guy couldn't hit a shot to save his life the entire playoffs, really, until the last game. And then he's finally on fire. And that's forcing Steph Curry to actually work more defensively. And Steph Curry already has to work more defensively because you're without one of the better perimeter defenders in the entire NBA, one of the more underrated perimeter defenders in the entire NBA, and Klay Thompson. And also Kevin Durant. Like, I feel like we underrate him as a defender because he's such a good scorer, but he's also, I would say, a top 25 defender in the league.
The series would be over if especially, they had Durant, if he was healthy.
He's got a 14-foot wingspan, so just imagine him playing the passing lanes. But what I'm saying is Nick Nurse has had to make some uncomfortable adjustments because he had to take Danny Green out of that game when he was on fire. And he had to play Van Vliet. Because granted, Steph Curry had 34 points and 47 respectively in his big games, you know, without Klay and, you know, without Durant in this series. So you look at that and you're like, oh, Van Vliet ain't doing anything defensively. But he is. Like, he's making things really uncomfortable.
Oh, I think he should be fouled on every play, dude. He's about as close as you can be to Curry without fouling.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, we ragged on Nick Nurse, but he is out-coaching Steve Kerr in this series. Just that little adjustment right there. Everything he's done defensively.
Again, though, I come from a place where this finals is really affecting me. I cannot tell you that I'm completely rational about my takes. I mean, I'm giving credit to the Raptors with the caveat that you get lucky to be here. I'm giving Nick Nurse credit with the caveat that, look, this guy's not as much of a genius as he's getting painted. So what happened the other night? He does the box and one.
Yeah.
Okay. So the box and one is a term that you pretty much do in junior high, and you know, you don't see it at the NBA. Mm-hmm. We haven't heard the term box and one, and oh, he's so clever, he pulled the box and one. You know what he did? He said the Warriors have four guys on the court that can't shoot, and they've got one that can, so let's cover the one that can.
Right.
That happened to be a box and one.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting credit for pulling out this term that you haven't heard since junior high. Meanwhile, he's doing what any idiot would do as a coach, covering the guy that can shoot and not covering the guys that can't shoot. So, yes, he gets credit, but it's not like he's reinventing the wheel here. He's just covering the guy that can shoot and leaving open the guys that can't.
I like Bart's point about giving credit. I will give Nick Nurse credit, Ryan, but I am not going to respect any man who walks around in a monogrammed NN hat. That's just not, I can't
respect
that.
And the gold chain he's got on his neck at all times.
Game one, when Fred Van Vliet was on Curry, I had to pull this up. 33 possessions, 27 points. Let's go game three, 30 possessions, 11 points on 4 of 8 shooting. Danny Green, when he was on him in game three, 18 possessions. And Curry had 12 points on 3 of 9 shooting. So 12 points really quick on Danny Green. So he had to make that adjustment, pull him out of that game, even though he was knocking down shots. But I'm with you. Like, it hurts to give Nick Nurse credit, especially when he is walking around with his own flat-brimmed hat with NN on it. But what were you saying? I completely agree. And that was like the whole... Like, last game, okay? So you just saw what was happening because...
If Nick Bodie's had no contributions to this show... The sigh you just had audibly was worth the whole thing.
And you saw what was coming. Like, you saw it last game because Curry was awesome. I mean, he went for 40-plus. He was knocking down shots. But, like, you can't rely on Iggy to knock down threes. Like, he'll hit a clutch one here and there. But you can't rely on Draymond Green as your second scoring option.
4.5-point line.
And right. Also, you look at the Warriors, like, in their first couple title runs. Look at the bench compared to what they have now. That bench is depleted,
bench
man.
Is
David West is gone. Like, and now you're relying on the bench to actually get you buckets in key stretches.
McKinney's missing dunks.
So even when the Warriors would knock down shots and cut into that lead to like 8 points, 7 points, the Raptors would just come right back. And I don't think that's sustainable. That's why I do pick the Warriors tonight. Like, I don't think you're going to be able to hold Curry in check tonight with Klay Thompson back. I think Klay's going to have a big game, even if he's 60%, because I think you're going to have to make different decisions defensively. Nick Nurse will. So I don't think it's sustainable. I'm going Warriors tonight.
4.5?
No, I just took the line. I don't trust the 4.5. I feel like
we're
Vegas.
Chuck on 4.5
yesterday. You took the 4.5? See,
with
oh,
Chuck.
Yeah, that's right. See, what scares me about that is I feel like Vegas, what they're saying with that four, with that half, especially with the hook, is they're saying, okay, we all know the Warriors are evening things up. They're not dropping 2 at Oracle and going down in this series 3-1. Like, they're winning this series. Let's be honest, or at least they're taking it to seven games. So what they're saying is, what they're saying is, we're going to keep this close. So everybody in the planet hammers the Warriors.
I think they need Durant back.
But the Warriors are only going to win by 4 or 3. That hook's going to get everybody.
Ryan, you're with me on this, right? Durant is done for the year. That Achilles, that's, he's not coming back. I went to UW Oshkosh. I have like 15 friends who are all either nurses or physical therapists. I texted 20 people the video when he went down. All of them to a T said, that's an Achilles, he's done. My chiropractor, same thing. I don't buy it. His agents
Then the Raptors are winning the finals.
Well, it was the same thing, like the same way that he reacted was the way that Kobe reacted, the way that DeMarcus Cousins had reacted. I said that, Bart, the next day. I said, oh, that's serious. His people went into the locker room at halftime and said, he's got big money coming up. Nothing serious.
Let's talk to Dan Favalli about this. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, why Draymond Green is Aaron Rodgers, and it didn't work for Aaron Rodgers, and I'm starting to think it's not going to work for Draymond Green. It's Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins here on The Fan.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.